Okay, we'd like to start the next session, which is to hear from our Office of Research and Analysis on a working paper with regard to restatements of financial statements, and I'm going to turn this over to Marty Bauman. Marty is the director of our Office of Research and Analysis, and he will introduce the two presenters. Thanks, Marty.
Thanks, Tom. As Tom said, I'm the director of the PCAOB's Office of Research and Analysis, and I'm pleased to introduce, to my right, the office's chief economist, Steve Byers, and our senior economist, Yana Hranayova. In a moment, they will be presenting for discussion and consideration their working paper, studying changes in market responses to financial statement restatement announcements in the Sarbanes-Oxley era. The Office of Research and Analysis is charged with, among other things, assessing the risk of material misstatements in audited financial statements. In this effort, the office supports the board and the efforts of the PCAOB's inspections and standard-setting activities. The office developed and maintains a comprehensive restatement database for a variety of analytical and also predictive purposes. Our chief economist's office determined that this database could also be useful in assessing how the stock market was reacting to restatements. This effort led to the paper that will be discussed today. It's important to note that this research is at a, quote, working paper stage. In the normal course, economists would circulate the working paper at academic seminars, meetings, etc., and then submit the paper to an academic journal, which would ask others to peer review it. Comments and input from the peer reviewers would help the authors further advance and improve the research before the journal would accept it for publication. So while Steve and Yana will be submitting this research for such peer review, we felt that we should also seek comment and input on the research from this standing advisory group. Also, because of the role of the PCAOB, we wanted to ensure that the research, even at this preliminary stage, was exposed by us and that it didn't become public in some other fashion. So with that said, I'll ask Steve and Yana to present their research.
Well, thank you very much, Marty. We've found out that there's no shortage of opinions on this area, so we think it'll be a lively discussion. This paper was really an offshoot of some other research we're doing, and we thought we might be able to garner some insight into if Sarbanes-Oxley or the events surrounding it have impacted the market's reaction to financial restatements. And at first glance, it appears that it does. And we recognize that we may have to do some additional estimation and correction for some assumptions, but we think we can get somewhere with this conclusively. So, are market responses to restatement announcements different in the periods before and after the enactment of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2000? Mind you, we just chose Sarbanes-Oxley as a dividing line, but we started to see this phenomenon as early as Enron, which when the Department of Justice began its investigation in Enron, which was in January 2001, I believe, or early 2002. So we haven't identified the point yet where this phenomenon began. And some people have speculated it may have started clear back with Reg FD or maybe with the issue of SAS 99. So that remains to be seen. But if things have changed, how have they changed? Has market efficiency and price volatility due to restatements been impacted? The meaning of a restatement announcement in our paper, we're not talking about a restatement per se. Some of the observations we had in this database actually came through financial filings, 10-Ks, 10-KAs, et cetera, and some of them came through just press releases or an 8K that did not provide any additional information such as we're restating or we think we might have a problem in a particular area. So the first public announcement really captures is a publication date or a filing date that either captures a restatement reveals an intent to restate or discusses a concern. And we left concern in this paper because there's a variety of ways that companies have alluded to the fact they think they might have a problem. So here is a slide that depicts the split date in the data. So what we had was a whole database of restatements going from 1998 to 2005. And it was a particular type of restatements. It's not all restatements, and we'll describe that subset of restatements in a minute. What we did not seek to determine was whether or not the act, Sarbanes-Oxley, caused a change in the market's reaction to these restatement announcements. We just merely used it as a dividing line. We mentioned that we're considering moving that around. Here's our $5 or our $50 million slide, however you want to look at it. But hopefully you can see it. It's, when I presented this in the past, I could stand up and point things out. So if you have a question, let me know. The slide, the panel on the left, shows the abnormal returns after we've removed the market effect on stock prices for these companies that have had financial restatements. The panel on the left is the period pre-SOX, so prior to July 30th, 2002. You'll see three colors of time series there. You've got a blue line, a black line, and a red line. The blue line shows the positive market reaction to restatement announcements. The black line shows those that statistically were insignificant. In other words, we could not statistically prove that the movement in the stock price or the return on the stock that day was a result of the announcement of the restatement. So we said those were insignificant restatements. The red line shows the negative market reaction. So prior to SOX, about 4% of restatement announcements were followed by a positive market reaction. No market reaction was 75%, so three-quarters of these the market was not reacting to. And negative market reactions, about 21%. If you go to the right-hand panel, same color designation, but you'll see quite a difference both in the width of the positive and negative restatements. And what we saw here was an increase in the number or the percentage of positive market reactions. It went up about 1.7%. And the insignificant market reactions soared to 83.8%. The negative market reactions went down to 10.3%. Now, what this resulted in was that the magnitude of negative market responses to restatements has decreased by 71%. What we're saying here is if you look at the red time series on the left panel, that the change from day zero, and if you can see, if you look in the middle of the panel where you see the big drop in the time series, that's at day zero. What we're depicting here is the 20 days prior to the restatement announcement date and the 20 days after. Don't be confused for the academics in here. We did estimate a market model for this over, 120 days prior to this, so that we got a good estimate for the market response. So at day zero, you see At day zero, we saw an initial response, and then on the day one, which is the day after the day of the announcement, we saw another response. The reason we chose those 2 days is this. Some of the restatement announcements came, you know, after 4:30 or 5 o'clock, or overnight they were released. So we said if we really want to see the true impact, we need to look at day zero and the following day. So the negative market reactions decreased by 71%. The positive market reactions also decreased by 33%. And you'll notice that the post-announcement market reaction exhibits decreased volatility. What that means is if you look at the time series on the left-hand panel, they move around a lot. And if you're familiar with standard deviation or variance, you'll see that there is a higher variance in the time series in the left-hand panel. And this is statistically shown. We did the appropriate test to determine this. That there's less volatility in the stock prices of these companies that have announced restatements post-SOX. And this has led us to make a comment that, well, you know, why is that? And we want to get information for you guys as to why you think that might be the case. Any questions at this point before we go on? Okay.
Galen Hansen.
period of time did you go? How far out does this go? Where was your cutoff point?
Are you talking about how far out we went after the restatement announcement?
Yeah, how far are you looking into restatements? How far out since stocks was it out?
Oh, okay. Our cutoff line was the restatement announcements in the left-hand panel, the pre-socks,
right,
go from 1998 to July 30th, 2002. Okay? From in the post-socks, we've got going from August, is there 31 days in July? August 1st to the end of 1995. Okay? 2005. So we've got about 3 years. Post.
So none of these pick up any of the backdating issues that we've seen in the last couple of years?
No. And now's probably a good time to talk about the, maybe I'll let Jana talk about this. She wants about, no?
But Zavanna Pomeros?
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt your flow, but since you said this was the $50 million slide, can we pose questions on this slide? Is that appropriate now?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Great. Well, I'm going to masquerade as an academic for just a couple minutes, but I decline to masquerade as an old one, as Joe said this morning. And I just wanted to start out with sort of an academic approach to this because I wanted to end with really a public policy question, but to get there through an academic route. And one of the things that academics do when they look at papers like this is they start out asking, what's the research question? And it seemed to me that the research question here was a little bit broader than has been described on the slide, and that was you were seeking to try to determine whether investor confidence has changed post-SOX. In other words, do we have greater investor confidence in the post-SOX era than we did in the pre-SOX era or some time frame around that? And I think that's an enormously important question. However, it's a very difficult question to address. And it's hard for me to think about using restatements to address that question, a market reaction to restatements to address that question. So while I think it's an enormously important question, it just is a very difficult one to address. That isn't to say that restatements themselves might not have interesting questions within them. Of course, heaven knows, I've personally thought that they did. And as Joe talked about, people have to publish to meet academic criteria, so that's some of what I've been doing as part of our academic incentive system. But when we do these papers, we also ask about the methodology, and so one of the things we would ask about is, you know, the approach that you're taking to addressing market reaction. And there's a large literature that talks about market reaction to restatements. And there's a number of variables that influence market reaction to restatements, none of which are reflected in this paper. This paper is simply a univariate analysis of market reaction to restatements pre- and post-SOX. You can't say anything about market reaction unless you control for these other factors. So I would really urge you to reconsider this paper in light of the existing research that looks at so many other factors that influence market reaction. And one of those things that influence them is, I mean, when you think about why would there be positive reaction to restatement announcements, and you tend to think about that as not good news, well, a number of these restatements are announced in conjunction with other information. And none of this is controlled for here in this study. So this slide that you have up here on the screen doesn't control for anything else that influences restatements, including whether or not they were released with other information and controlling for that other information. And that leads me to the point of this slide, which basically, if you look at it, it says 75% of these restatements pre-SOX are statistically insignificant, which implies that they don't matter, and 84% of them post-SOX. I just find it really curious that the PCAOB would come out with a paper that says restatements don't matter. And I think that given what we're talking about here, and I've taken an academic approach to this. Remember, these papers go through an academic peer review process that often the results change as a result of that peer review process. They're very lengthy. They can take 2 to 3 years, and they come out in a very significantly different place. And I guess I just worry, one, I wonder why the PCAOB is coming out with a paper that really undermines what it is they're trying to do in terms of discourage misstatements and restatements by implying they don't matter. And then the second thing is, can they really tolerate this kind of peer review process that has to be willing to significantly change findings? And is that the best use of resources? Thank you.
Well, thanks for that comment. Some of what you said we certainly have considered, and some of what you say is true. We have stumbled onto the fact that in the short time since this paper has unveiled itself, that we've had a lot of comments very similar to yours, and I think one of the problems in the paper is we haven't accurately described what we have controlled for. And so just briefly, I'll let you know that we will describe better what we have controlled for, and rest assured that what the reason this restatement database is much smaller than, say, what you would have seen in the Glass-Lewis, the GAO report is, we looked for restatement announcement dates where the only bit of information that was in that restatement announcement database, with the exception of the 10K filings and the 10Q types of things, was that there was just a restatement, that there was just a problem or a concern in the restatements. Now, so we're looking into that, and it'll be fairly clear in 2 or 3 years, so thanks.
Damon Silvers?
After Savannah's coming, I'm a little lost for words. But question that I couldn't, I don't understand in relation to this chart, is that in many points in the paper you say that you don't see any sign of pre-event information leakage, and yet, I can see how that would be consistent with the post-SOX graph of the statistically insignificant market reactions. You see that in the post-SOX universe, the whole population basically flatlines in terms of abnormal returns, but in the pre-SOX graph, it's not right. You've got a secular downturn for the whole population, since what you're measuring is abnormal returns, I don't see how that's consistent with the assertion that there's not leakage. And it seems to me this, if I'm not making a mistake here, that this is quite relevant to Zavanna's point about other variables and other things that are going on. There are many different, very different sort of narratives in relation to restatements. And if there's different sort of sequencing in terms of the mix of information that the market is reacting to when the restatement hits, right? And there is leakage, right? That not leakage about the restatement itself, but leakage about a series of problems which the restatement is embedded in, then that would seem to cast doubt on the ability to use this data. This downward trend lines would seem to suggest that's what's going on. The second thing I would say, which may be somewhat more sort of positive in relation to this study, is that it's, and I'd like you to react to it, is that it strikes me that this study would seem to suggest that, and would be consistent with a theory, which was that pre-SOX, restatements were unusual enough, and investor confidence in the audit process was low enough that investors would tend to view a restatement as a signal of impending catastrophe, and would feel that they didn't have very much information to really assess what it meant, and that post-SOX that has diminished, right? That one could read that out of this. But I would agree though with Zavanna that it seems to me that this is sort of intellectually inadequate to the full. that this paper, as an analysis of the full role of restatements around investor confidence and information mixes, is intellectually inadequate because they're simply, it's simply not a rich enough story about what goes on around them and what they're embedded in. And in particular, that terms like statistically insignificant, which are, I think, understood in the community of academics, may tell us, maybe somewhat misleading, that without giving that rich story, right, that you have a paper that is misleading in relationship to the role of the process of monitoring financial statements and drawing out the role that restatements play. And I hope I'm sort of trying to express a concern that I think is hard to flesh out fully without sort of more data.
Well, Paul, you want one more question?
Christy Wood.
From an investor's point of view, I just wondered that given this environment has been one of that your study is one of persistent declining volatility. How do you control for that? And because volatility declined in the prior, if you think about SOX, middle of 2002, I mean, volatility declined precipitously for the ensuing 4.5 years until this summer. And then in the environment prior to that, you had both a radical sort of rise in late 90s and then a bear market. And I just think that I was wondering, A, did you control for it, and how did you control for it, and how can you extrapolate that from the study?
Thank you. If we have time, we'll after we get the rest of the questions, we can talk about that.
Lynn, did you have a question? I just thought your card was up. Sorry. Dick Dietrich?
Well, that is true, and we felt like we controlled for that as much as we possibly could, because when you calculate abnormal returns, you're trying to remove the impact of the overall markets from the individual stock price reaction of a company, or the returns from the company. If you remove the overall market impact, think of it as of the normal return of the company. If you do that you've taken out the volatility of the stock market itself. Now, we know we can't control it for that completely, but we recognize the problem.
So just to be clear, the volatility part study that you did, was a cap weighted, you're saying? What's the part that's cap weighted?
Well, it may be misunderstanding what we said, but when you calculate abnormal returns, you try and remove the stock price reaction or the total return of that particular company's stock price on a given day by basically neutralizing its beta associated with the market. So if you do that, you could infer that you're taking out the volatility of the market from that individual company's return that day or over the period you're studying.
I think to answer that, I think this is intended to be the abnormal return, not the you've taken out the.
It's not the total return. These are abnormal returns that are just specific to the company over and above how it would have responded given overall movements in the market over this period. If you'd like, I'd talk to you afterwards. So.
Dick Dietrich?
No, thank you. I think what I'd like to leave you with is a question that can be considered a rhetorical question, but I think it might really help you in thinking about this. If you think about a restatement, and I think this gets to Zavanna's point, what is it in the restatement that you think causes investors to react? One possibility is the restatement itself. That would raise Damon's question, which is, can someone project that a restatement is likely to be announced? And there are a number of signals that can give credence to that. The firing of a CFO, for example, the delay of financial statements release. There's lots of messages that come out. So as you think about the downward drift that it obtains in your sample on the left for the positive reaction companies at the time of the announcement itself. There clearly could be things that are presaging the announcement of the restatement. Secondly, restatements are very different in the ways that they operate. I saw a restatement that was performed as an amendment to a 10K that was solely to change a parenthesis in the statement of cash flows. Now, certainly, a restatement like that would be very different than one where the company was announcing that the last 5 years of earnings were all made up. And so one of the possibilities would be, and if you look at the series back before 1998, you'll find that there were relatively few restatements that obtained. Now, one possibility is because there were actually no errors in financial reporting prior to 1998. But having spoken with somebody who was a chief accounting officer for a Fortune 50 company, he said, are you kidding? He said, look at a restatement that was recently done by General Electric. And, John, I'll let you correct me on the numbers. But his numbers were it was like a $100 million restatement on a company that had $20 billion of earnings. And he said, we would never have restated that at an earlier point in time. And so getting back again to Zavanna's comment, it may be that if you think again about the pathology of what it is that's causing investors to react, that investor reactions are different post-SOX because the kinds of restatements that are being announced have differences in their pathology post-SOX. And that, I think that's what Zavanna's point was really getting to, is you've really got to tease these things out and find out what other factors are going on and what it is that you would expect investors to be responding to. And that may help you to understand why you're getting positive adjustments in some cases, negative adjustments in other cases. And I suspect that the academics around the room could really have a lot of other detailed comments for you about things that only make sense to academics, but we can do that offline.
There's one thing we probably should answer and explain right now, and that is about this restatement database. We built our own restatement database because what we were trying to do, and we mentioned this in the paper, was we excluded restatements that weren't related to changes in the financial statements due to change in errors or mathematical mistakes. Improper application of GAAP or fraud. So none of these restatements in this study include anything for, I'd like to let John Ameren. The long and short is we control
for
as best you could. It's just for accounting errors, not what you might consider these other, not frivolous, but more, I don't even know what you'd call it, like your parenthesis change. None of that is in this restatement database. And a parenthesis changes?
That would be included. Accounting, the restatement database here is for accounting errors, and what I think Steve's trying to say is certain restatements for other things like a change in accounting principle are not included, or a stock split or something is not included. It's for accounting errors.
I think what we're trying to say is that we understand that there's lots of subtleties among the set of things that will fall into your database. We also understand that there's lots of things that would not fall into your database, and appropriately so. So the issue really is that restatements aren't always the same, even if they all fall in within the class of errors or irregularities.
Ted White.
Thank you. I, for one, like what you've done, and I would encourage you to continue this tact and put resources toward this. I think this is a fascinating question. I fully recognize the challenges in the methodology, and particularly given the topic. I think it's very true that each one of these situations is different. You could have the exact type of restatement in a different company with a different set of circumstances and have different impact. In the aggregate, I find this meaningful, and I for one, I don't view it as negative that you have post your cutoff point a larger percentage that are found statistically insignificant. In fact, I actually view that opposite in that I think part of what building and maintaining investor confidence is an understanding that there's a robust mechanism to cause restatements and keep this train on the track, and that there's a few different ways to look at that type of information. As far as recommendations to supplement this and get at what is very different situations, I mean, I would suggest maybe look at some case studies around restatements in both the pre and post, including interviews with folks that are close to it and looking at the street research around these types of things, trying to put into context what the situation at the company is. That will be very hard to do, in my opinion, but I think it's somewhat meaningful in that the same types of restatements are likely to affect each situation differently, but there's probably some information in here that helps supplement and fill in the voids in what this methodology would naturally leave.
I'd like to just ask Steve a question because I think it might answer a question raised by you, Dick, and some others. The positive market reaction post a restatement would seem to be a surprise to most. But I think that a very large percentage, Steve, am I right, maybe 50% or so or some number in that neighborhood were actually announced, the restatement was actually announced in the 10-K, stealth restatement, where the numbers were there at the same time as the restatement announcement. And therefore, the reader was not only hearing about a restatement, but was actually seeing the results at the exact same time, which may have been improved financial results than they otherwise had seen before.
Well, there's another possibility here, and I don't remember who brought this up, but if you look at the left-hand panel, there was this drifting down prior to the announcement date in the pre-SOX era. And one thing Yana and I wanted to look into and get some help on is if you think about pre-SOX, that there was this tendency from companies to not want to announce a restatement at all costs until they were forced to, okay? But that there was other information coming out prior to our 20-day window here, or even during that period, that allowed the street or Wall Street and so forth to infer that, gosh, something doesn't seem right. So there's this pessimistic trend downward. And post-SOX, there's been more of a tendency, we've surmised, for companies to come out and go ahead and say, well, we're not going to sweep this under the rug for a long time. We're going to come out and make the announcement right away. So we think that the absence of that downward drift is really the fact that disclosure is coming sooner from the company through a restatement or an announcement of it. We don't have proof of this yet, of course, but we're surmising. And did I answer your question, Marty, in a way?
In a way, but it is correct that a vast number of these were actually stated in the first time in a 10-J.
For instance, yes, that's true. A little under 50% of them were in the post-SOX era.
So I think that's a situation where the investor has the numbers at the exact same time that they have the restatement, which could therefore evoke a response different than you might think someone just simply announcing a restatement would evoke. I think the next question was from Vin Coleman.
Thanks, Marty. Maybe just a couple questions that are a little bit similar, just because I think it's in your last paragraph where you're talking about, more work in the characteristics. Perhaps two questions around the characteristics when you're talking about your database. One would be around the nature of the restatement. I think it's been touched upon here, right? A restatement of revenue may be very different than a technical restatement around the hedge accounting derivatives that became very common that had nothing to do with cash, as an example. Or, you can go to, a restatement of cash flows. So they're just viewed differently. And I think that's in your characteristic statement here. And I was wondering, so that's question one. And then question two is, did you also consider the materiality? There's been discussions, quite a bit of discussions, around the relative materiality of the restatements, and wanted to know whether or not you took that into account. Because I think if you go up a level, I also like this from the standpoint of, and if you continue to move forward, the reality is right now the number of restatements of large issuers, if you think about whether stocks was positive or not, is actually coming down for anybody who's really analyzing this. And interestingly enough, for the smaller
registrants, the number of restatements is actually increasing. And so there was a dynamic going on during this period. You know, we were just talking amongst ourselves. I'm not surprised, by the way, Marty, with the positive, because it's interesting, is it's now behind you. So there was an announcement, the restatement happens, it's now behind you, and everybody moves on, and people feel better and more confident about it. So there's a dynamic going on in the last 4 years that was very unique, which I think needs to be built into the characteristics, which I think would be very useful. But just wondering if you took characteristics and materiality.
We did not take materiality. We have been considering ways to try and look at how was the market response in this context related to the size of the restatement, which I think is what you're referring to. Some people have tried to do that before, and it's I think it's a difficult thing to do because involved in certain you'll see in restatements multiple reasons for the restatements. And so that leads to the characteristics as well. We did take Glass-Lewis's categories for restatements. They had 12 broad categories. And we did some frequency distribution analysis on that for this study to see if there was anything pre- or post-SOX different in the characteristics for what people were restating for. And there's nothing that stands out to you glaringly that says these certain kind of restatements are causing more positive market reactions and these are causing more negative, any different than they were prior to SOX. So we are looking into that. We haven't pursued it entirely yet, but we are going to – we've got some of that information, yes.
So these this includes really all restatements for accounting errors, whether they be, as you said, technical or whether they be a restatement for revenue. It excludes companies that aren't on the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ, so that's a population of companies that excludes. So it includes only larger companies.
Well, the only reason I'm bringing it up is when a restatement's going out and we're involved in it, we have a pretty good sense, and we're getting pretty good at knowing whether or not there's going to be a reaction or not. And generally, it's materiality in the nature.
I think Tom Linsmeyer was next.